Blog Talk Radio.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
This is Leonard Johnson coming from Hammerland, and want to thank you for tuning in and getting up another third show of the year. And man, I'm glad to be on the radio tonight. It's been a wild week. It's been interesting to say the least. And I'm so glad to get a. Let me first of all go and say, let me thank you guys again for tuning into the show this week. Our count went up to 300 last week on the interview. And that's a live and podcast, and that is great. And we just are glad that you guys listen in, and I hope you get some value out of what we will be trying to attempt right here. I had an interesting post on Facebook a little while ago. A guy was talking about formations and everything, but let me say that we are not here to compete with different systems and everything. As a matter of fact, if you listen to the show, we cover a wide range of subjects. And I think we spend less time talking about X's and O's than a lot. So we're not here to compete. I think all systems are good. It's what you feel comfortable with. It's what you want to do with your thing. But the one thing someone said to me early in the week is that whatever you do, believe in what you do. Just believe in what you do and teach what you know and roll with it. We're just here for support. And again, we cover all wings, the single wing, double wing, and the old wing key. And I just happy to bring this form to you so that we can get these ideas out and everything. Have completed February's guest list, and just to kind of give you an idea of who we got coming on, we got the great Doug Kerr from Kansas on, and Zary Sachet from Virginia. They'll be on next week. Then we got a couple of home guys there, Justin Danner. Both of these guys are wing T. Doug and Jerry are single wing guys. Justin is a wing T guy. And Jet Turner from, some of you may remember Jet. He was one of the first in South Carolina to start doing this thing from Broome High School right here in South Carolina. Then we got the legend coming on, Harold Strauss from California. If you have not heard Harold, you are missing something because this man is filled with wisdom and, you know, he's one of my heroes in this in this business. But those are the guests for the next few weeks going forward. Another thing that we're going to try to do, we want to get the youth involved, the youth football coaches involved too. So what we're going to do, we're going to carve out some time during the broadcast to talk to youth coaches. So if any of you great youth coaches out there who want to get on it, what we want to do is share your ideas of how you run your organization. Not necessarily the X's and O's, and you can talk about anything you want to talk about. But if you are interested in getting on the show and talking about your youth program, you're more than welcome, because there are a lot of youth programs out there, and I can think of quite a few of them that do it well. And again, this forum is used to help people across the spectrum, and this is what this thing is for. So I'll give you more details about that at the end of the show. Now, let me see if we can bring our guests on. I tell you what, I messaged this young man earlier this afternoon, and I didn't get a quick response. And I finally got a response from him, and he said he was just getting off the airplane. And I guess he was out sharing his knowledge with everybody, but I'll let him talk about that. I don't know where Corey goes at these days, you know. I think I met Corey back in, I don't know, I can't remember the time, but I remember the scary kid who was walking around the clinic asking questions and trying to soak in all the knowledge that he possibly could. And he's turned to be a phenomenal coach, but better than that, he's turned to be a phenomenal role model for that community that he serves. And if you have not heard this guy, you are missing a treat, because this guy is good at what he's done. He is developing to a great coach, and he's on the clinic speaking circuit right now. So let me see if we can reach out to River Rouge, Michigan, to see if we can get Corey on. Corey, I hope I can get this right. Are you there? Corey, are you there? Okay, let's do this. Corey?
Can you hear me?
I got you. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Coach. Doing real good.
Okay. Good. Man, where you coming from today?
I was coming from the USA Football National Coaches Convention in Florida. I was in Orlando, Florida.
You were just down there just observing, or were you spreading your knowledge?
Just observing. They asked for me to come down and take a look at some things, and they asked for me to become one of the speakers, one of the people that does their X and O breakdown for them. They have small presentations that go on, and then they also asked if I have any interest in coaching on the U.S. National team. So definitely a great opportunity for me to reach out to kids from, you know, all over the country. So I'm very excited about those opportunities.
I tell you, when I grow up, man, I'm going to be just like you. Lord, I'm How's the family doing, man?
Family is doing good. I'm in the wife with the in the car with the wife right now, and about to pull up to the new house with the kids.
You got a new house now?
Yes, we were blessed with a wonderful house here in Rouge. This was a part of the plan to make it more comfortable for my family to be here, being that we were in a small 2-bedroom house renting, and now we're inside of a 4-bedroom house that it took 3 months to renovate, so we had to move back in with my parents. And you know, it was really a commitment financially that we had to find a way to get it done, and we found a way. You know, the Lord was able to bless us with some great things, and our school district did some great things to make sure that we had everything we need, because now I'm literally, I would say, 25 steps away from my office. So I can, you know, I walk to work now. So I'm definitely been entrenched in the community, living down here for since 2012. But now I'm right next door to the high school as far as where my house is, and I'm very, very proud of the house I was able to bless my wife and my family with, being that all this came up because I could tackle people when I was younger. So It's just a blessing to see how the how the game of football really gives you the opportunity to change your life and the course of your life, and really have fun and make sure that others have things that they may want to get involved with in reference to football.
And let me tell everybody who's listening, here's another coach who definitely married up. I met his wife a couple of times, and I can tell you guys, he definitely married up. She's just as sweet as sugar, I tell you. Make sure you tell her I say hello, okay?
I sure will.
Okay. Corey, tell somebody who don't know you, and I know I put this little bio and everything up and everything. Could you kind of let everybody know who you are, how you got your start and everything?
Gotcha. I was a youth league football guy like everybody else, obviously played some youth league ball. Wasn't the biggest kid, but I really enjoyed knocking people out and really taking shots at guys. And so with that being said, I could never play my dad's position. My father had to put up his football cleats at the age of 17 because they had me very, very young. And so I just felt inspired to try and allow him to live through me to a certain extent on the field. So I just went after people just to try and make dad proud, which most guys go through that process of trying to make their parents proud when they're on the field. And but I just went about it a different way. I wanted to play his position. They would never allow me to play inside linebacker. I was too thin, so they always put me at on the edge, at the outside linebacker, or at safety. And so I ended up taking that thing and running with it. And I was blessed with the opportunity to go to a school across town, St. Michael Forest High School, who has 12 state championships total in football. And the great thing about this school is that it was ran by great men, great coaches. We had about 350 kids inside of our building, about 35 guys on our team, but we played against some of the largest, most powerful high school football programs in the state, guys with 60, 70 guys on it, and we would pummel these guys. And so I came from a situation where it was all about, you know, mental and physical toughness and really working hard but receiving love and care from your coaches to make you believe in a sense of family. And from there, I was able to get an opportunity to play at Eastern Michigan, as one of the leading tacklers at Eastern Michigan University, and I'm very proud of that. You know, the other part of Eastern Michigan, we lost a lot of games at Eastern Michigan, and so I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about X and O's and schemes because, you know, I was coached by Bob Diaco, who's now a defensive coordinator at the college level. He was just a head coach at UConn, and now he's a defensive coordinator at Nebraska. Mike Elston, who's not a defensive line coach at Notre Dame. So many great minds. John Dignan, who's a high school administrator who coached at Eastern Michigan. A lot of great guys who taught me a lot about ball. And so that's pretty much where I got my start in football at. And so from there, it was going into the world of coaching. And so I wasn't picked in the 06 NFL draft. And so from there I had to figure out, you know, what's my next step in this world. And it just ended up being coaching for me. I ended up with Scott Merchant at Chippewa Valley High School, but that was by way of John Dignan, the same guy that recruited me to play at Eastern Michigan University. Ended up being, like I said, he was a high school administrator, and he gave me the opportunity to start coaching. So I was a wide receivers coach and defensive backs coach at first. I don't know why they ever allowed me to coach the wide receivers, because I knew nothing about offensive football, and I never scored a touchdown a day in my life. As I told you guys, I was a defensive dude. So they allowed me to coach up the wide receivers, and I taught them guys how to stalk block like never before, because that's all we worked every day. And so so with that being said, that was my first start at coaching at UD Jesuit. From there, I went to Ann Arbor Huron. My job moved me. I was a personal trainer and manager of Bally Total Fitness, and they moved me to Ann Arbor, so I ended up taking a defensive coaching position there with defensive backs and wide receivers. And again, still working on stalking and tackling every day at practice. And so I was starting to develop my own beliefs in football and understanding that, you know, with all the scheme and X and O's, it's really all about blocking and tackling. If you can do that well, you got a shot. And so I was coaching at some schools that did not have necessarily a lot of talent, They were nothing like the school that I went to, but I was learning. And so my high school coach kept telling me, hey, you keep learning, you keep getting your butt whooped. You can't come and coach with me yet. You know, you got to get better. And so eventually he gave me the opportunity to come and coach with him. And at that time, he ended up being at Inkster High School. Devin Gardner was a junior there who ended up going to Michigan and starting at quarterback for some years. Cameron Gordon, we had a lot of very, very good players. So from there, we ended up losing the state championship. Took a program that, you know, Inkster was a very bad football program, but we were able to take that thing and flip it real fast. Went to the state championship. We lost to East Grand Rapids High School to a gentleman, Peter Sturzma, who's right now, he's the head football coach of Hope College, a Division III college out here. And with that being said, we I took an opportunity here at River Rouge High School where it just so happens that this place that gave me a call, River Rouge, the funny thing about River Rouge is, you know, they called me on my work phone at Valley's saying, hey, we want you to bring that defense over here to River Rouge. And so the other funny thing that I found was, you know, my fiance had graduated from River Rouge. She was a valedictorian here in 2001. And just like Coach said, I'll kick my coverage. You know, I was a 2.5 guy and a 17 on the ACT. I wasn't the brightest one out the bunch. The girl I ended up getting with, she was about a 4.0 overall and about a 30 on the ACT. So I tell you what, I was real lucky to get this one, you know. And with that being said, so everybody knows her around here. Funny is another little funny story about her. So I walk into the Board of Education meeting with her the day that they hired me. And they say, Autumn, you know, what are you here for? And she said, oh, well, this is my fiance. And, you know, they completely forgot they was hiring me that day. They just all started talking to her. And, hey, Autumn, it's so great to see you. And like, hey, I thought you guys was hiring me today to coach some football. So, it was that's a great story about her. But since then, we got here. We've been here now. This is 8 years. We've had a winning season pretty much 7 out of the 8 years and have sent several guys to Division II schools, some guys to some small Division I schools. We've sent some guys that's in the military right now. Even have guys that have graduated from college now have come back with jobs, and they want to be a part of the coaching staff and really – continue to see the young men from this community grow. The funny thing about this program is prior to getting here, this place had 7 losing seasons. It was drug infested as far as the players. They had a lot of guys that was in a program that was involved with marijuana, a lot of guys that were gang-related, a lot of guys that disrespected teachers, and the team GPA was about, I would say, on average, a 1.3, which is below our state standard. Our team GPA right now, we just made academic all-state again, 2 times in a row with a 3.57 GPA, which I'm very proud of. So we're acknowledged in our state as an all-academic, all-state team. And I'm doing this with kids from an urban setting, kids that should just be scoring a 2.5 GPA, but I'm forcing them behind to get a 3.5 GPA just to have a shot to change the course of their particular life as far as going to college and having a solid education. And if God bless you, the opportunity to play some football. The wins are the wins. You know, we've won about 65 games. We've lost about 19 games. And I'm doing it with a bunch of guys that were youth league coaches, except my college roommate. He's with me. He's my offensive line coach. He was my defense coordinator, but they say if you're going to run some type of wing system, you better coach the offensive line yourself or you better have your best friend do it. And so he takes care of that for me. I moved him from defense coordinator to defensive line coach. He plays the 3 technique and 1 technique at Eastern Michigan. Now he's my offensive line coach, and he does a phenomenal job. So I can't ever attest anything that we're doing on me. It's a we thing around here. And so those youth league coaches that I brought along were guys from the community that were loyal and didn't know a lot about ball, but they were motivated and driven to change lives of young men. So I started taking those guys to coaches' clinics and helping them get better and running coaches' clinics myself. And eventually now we're a staff of men that when you see us, you see us. You see a group of men that's prepared to work and prepared to develop maybe the worst sort of athlete or even the best athlete. So I'm very, very proud of what we did so far. And there's been different accolades and stuff like that that's come up from college coaching opportunities for myself and opportunities to speak around the country and all that stuff. At the end of the day, all glory is to God. You know, I'm not able to do any of this stuff without God and my single wing family, obviously you, Coach Johnson, Doug Kerr, Jim, all different guys that did such a great job. Jeff Barrow, Coach Ken Hofer, all you guys have decided to take me under your wing and give me an opportunity, most importantly, to help the help young men that you probably will never, ever meet. So I'm very, very thankful, most of all, that I was able to, you know, meet all of you guys when we did back in 2010. That's 7 years ago. Lord have mercy.
Seemed like it was just yesterday. And I remember I was on the way to practice, and my telephone started jumping off my hip. I said, who in the world is this calling me? Nobody calls me during practice. And I saw there's a Michigan number, and I said, who did I know in Michigan? I said, hello? And then it was Corey calling me, asking me a question about, I can't remember the question that you were asking. And I said, this dude got a lot of gumption right here.
It was about severe angle blocking. I didn't want to do
anything that's what it was.
You talked about without you teaching me and making sure I was doing it right. And so and you gave me all the tools I needed.
Let me ask you, how did you, and this is three parts, because a lot of guys think going into a situation like you went into is easy. You know, we make it sound easy right now because we see the fruits of the labor and everything. But going into that situation, what were some of the things you had to get right?
First thing we had to get right was the kids' social behaviors and the kids' academic behaviors. So I got rid of everybody that didn't want to buy in. There was no, it was a non-negotiable. And some coaches aren't willing to do that because we're not going to have enough players. So you dang all right. I was on the field with 19 guys, 11 on the field, 8 on the sideline. Didn't give a dang. And we took a lot of lumps across our chin, but we won two games that year. We went 2-7 that first year, but we cleaned the house. We got the house cleaned. That's the first thing you got to do, I believe. So the social behavior, we didn't have guys that were disrespecting teachers and slapping girls on the behind in the middle of the hallway or getting E's and F's. All that was gone. So all we knew at that point was we then needed to develop the culture of these good boys. And the only way I know how to develop the culture of young men is inside that weight room. We went hardcore inside the weight room, whereas they didn't have the physical gifts as far as height and speed and girth, but they had heart. And we developed their heart with a level of intestinal fortitude like no other, just teaching them to be tough mentally and to getting the job done no matter who they was up against. You could have put them guys up against the dang on Detroit Lions. They thought they was going to win. But because it was about attitude for us. And so the social behaviors and the academic behaviors all came along with that because it helped develop a young man's self-esteem, a young man that people would never tell him or pat him on the back, great job, I love you, I'm proud of you, just for doing the simple things in life. They haven't heard that stuff from people, from a lot of people. So when they get that, now they want to work even harder for themselves, for their brothers, and most importantly for you as their head coach. So leadership had to be firm. I had to be very, very firm. That's even with assistant coaches. I've had to let some men go that were great coaches but just weren't great men. You know, guys that had, you know, and I'm no judge. I'm not God by any means, but I believe if I am to have young men in my program and try and develop them to become men, I can't have a man on my staff that's married that's trying to spend time with several moms of the players. That's not possible. That's all right, Coach. That's just going to create a very cancerous element, you know, a very downtrodden young man eventually is going to be developed from that. Because now his mom is just identified as a sad chick or the other woman. And so I've gotten rid of coaches that did that type of stuff, you know. I've gotten rid of coaches that paraded and downtrodden on young men, talked down on young men. And not in a way of coaching, but in a way of the word, words like bitch, excuse my language.
Mm-hmm.
So all of my coaches, I tell them, y'all hold you to one standard only. Treat every single young man as if he your own son. And so that firm leadership that I had to have, it hurt because sometimes I found myself calling the offense and the defense. because I've gotten rid of so many guys. But I was willing to do it at the time because I knew if I'm going to hold the young men to this standard, I got to hold the grown men to the standard too. So that's what it was all about, just creating a culture of understanding and success, and everybody had to get their hand on the rope and pull it in the same direction, simply because we were in the situation where we had such a – we had did everything wrong enough already inside of this community before I got here. So I had to change everything, the color of the locker room, the way the weight room looked. I had to change everything. And that was an idea from my high school head coach, Coach Carter. They don't retain any coaches, bring in coaches. Any coach that don't want to follow the particular guidelines you got, get rid of. And so that's what we was able to do. And with that being said, we were then able that offseason to go and find an offense system, because remember, I'm a defensive guy. I can call some defense stuff, which I can go back and forth with the defense. Offensively, I couldn't tell you the difference between a pulling guard and that's going to funnel run and a guy that's going to track. I just called it a pull. So I had to learn a lot. And so with that being said, I was blessed with you guys to come and meet you and find you. And you guys poured into me and gave me the opportunity to teach my kid a team-based offense. That it's about all 11 guys. I'm not biased to the spread offensive guys or the flex bone or this or that. It's about the team when you talk to single wing. Everybody has to do the same thing the same way. Everybody has to have a belief and an understanding. And so we were able to do that with the help of you guys, and, you know, we were able to pound some people. And then next year we was able to go 6-3 and make the state playoff for the first time in 7 years. You know, since then we've been in the state playoffs every year. We made a state championship run. We've been in the semifinals. We've had guys on the all-state team. We have guys on the all-star team. They picked a single wing coach, a young African-American male, myself, at 34 years old, to be a head coach of the all-star team last year. And I run the single wing. So it's been a blessing, man. It has been a blessing.
Now, how far are you from Detroit? Because I want to put things in perspective right here.
If I take one step across the street, I'm in Detroit.
Right.
If I take one step across the street going south, I'm in Detroit. So River Rouge is pretty much an area in southwest Detroit.
And I want to put this in perspective because we're talking about the real hood right here.
We're talking about the hood, Coach.
We're talking about the real hood right here. You had to go in there and you had to make a difference, and you have made a difference. What did you do with your administration? How did you get them to buy in?
I told them either you guys gonna be with us or you gonna be against us, and it's gonna be a whole lot harder to be against us than be with us. Letting them know that hey, I'm gonna get these young men to make sure that they manage your classroom for you. Because in urban settings, you either have good old teachers or you got young teachers that are a little bit fearful sometimes of being direct to a loudmouth African-American male. But if I got a 230-pound kid on my football team, he'll tell that kid, hey, shut your mouth, bro. Don't talk to her like that. So we created leaders amongst our building. I told those guys, if it's a fight, you better get to it before I do. And is it dangerous, Coach? Is that crazy, Coach? Yes. But as chaotic as our building was back then, I couldn't do everything myself. And so my title inside the building is the Dean of Students. So I handle all the disciplinary infractions. So I pretty much created a security team within my players. They were breaking up fights or dare people to fight in front of them because they knew they were going to get hurt by a pretty strong football player. And it all goes back to the weight room. Why did they have the confidence to jump into a fight and slam down the ground? Well, they lift weights every day after school. So it all worked hand in hand. And so the teachers saw that they had a sense of backup from the football team. So then the next thing we did, we did some fundraisers, just selling cupcakes and stuff in front of the lunchroom and, selling popcorn and all, whatever we did. We got team shirts. We passed them out to those dang on teachers.
You mean to tell me that you didn't have a $100,000 athletic budget?
Oh no, sir, no sir, no sir. There was $0 and 0 cents in that budget when I first credited the football account. So everything that we earned, we built. And that was the goal. That was the goal of ours. When we passed them those teachers out T-shirts, and we invited them to the games, and we asked them to march down the middle of the street with us pre-game and made them feel a part of it. And the teachers that were a part of the buy-in did it. And just so that you know, right now, when we're out of debt as a school district, so our school district was in debt. We were on the brink of closing. Right now, our school district has a $4 million surplus. Right now, our school district has went from 1,100 students to 2,500 total students in our district. Our high school has went from 350 kids in it to 830 kids in it right now. So we were a priority school. We off the priority school list. And as I stated, some of those teachers that bought in, what does the superintendent do for those teachers? They still there. The teachers that didn't want to buy in and wanted to give some pushback about what we were trying to do, about my player sitting in the first two rows of class, and why can't he have his cell phone in class, Coach Parker? I say, well, because he can't focus on what you teach him. He can't focus on your lectures if he got his cell phone. Well, he needs to have his cell phone. Well, you need to be able to teach him a different way to do his work because he's not having his cell phone in class. And I tell you what, if you give him his cell phone long enough, he's going to be on Twitter and Instagram. He's not going to be doing research, whatever it is you telling me he's going to do. So it was some pushback there, Coach. It was difficult to get the teachers to buy into my guys have to sit in the first two rows of class. I understand you have a teacher chart, but they have to sit in the first two rows of class. Why? Because they'll focus more. They'll be in tune more with what it is you keep talking about. And so once the buy-in came through and through, you saw our team GPA grow. And so with that being said, was it difficult buy-in by the other administrators? Yeah. Yeah, because at some point they eventually thought that I was becoming too powerful. And so what I did was I made sure I always maintained a humble spirit. I thanked those people on a daily basis, and I made sure that they understood I'm just a part of this totem pole. I don't ever want to be on top of the totem pole because at that point I'm not grounded. I'm not where I need to be. And when you're at grassroots level on the ground, you need to be able to reach out to your kids and touch your kids. And I'm just talking in theory. But I never want to be at the top of the totem pole. I never want the teachers or anybody to feel I'm above them. No, I'm on the ground level. I hold you guys up, you know, so – for me, that's the toughest part on making people feel accepted and wanted, because that was the issue. I became a bit of a threat to them because I have 60 men that's on varsity and 30 men on JV. So I got 90 men out of our building that will do any and everything that I tell them to do. So that's what became a bit of an issue. But at the end of the day, they saw the common good in that. That they have 90 men that's sitting in the front of the class is telling people, hey, bro, shut up. Don't talk to the teacher like that. Do your work. And it's been fights between football players of guys that's new to the program that, you know, that's disrespectful. Well, he's going to get punched in his face. You know, and Coach, in other programs, this is not normal. In my program, it's normal. So what happens to the kid that punched him? Is he going to get suspended? Yes. Is he going to spend some time, out of practice and out of the game? Yes. But he better have gotten to that kid before I did, because by the time I get to the classroom and I see you are allowing him to do that, you're allowing him to mess up this culture that we created, you're in just as much trouble as him anyway. So not both of you guys are going to get suspended from practice and from the game anyway. So you might as well punch him in the mouth or hem him up or push him. Do something, but you better stop him. And so that's pretty much how we've gotten down to the point of doing things. Like I said, Coach, we are different. But if you're working in an urban setting and you're dealing with kids with trauma-sensitive issues, with these moms that are young and out of control, that don't care what they 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old boy is doing, they eating, you know, ramen noodles every night and they've got poor nutrition, if you're dealing with the true hood situation, you got to have a football program that's ran differently. I don't run a cookie cutter football program like some other coaches that I know. May God bless them, but God has blessed me with the opportunity to handle this situation the way I've handled it. And may God be the glory. I ain't got fired yet. So I'm gonna keep doing things the way I do it until it gets to the point where I gotta leave this place. And if I gotta leave this place for being a father, for being a disciplinarian to some of these young men, hey, I'm going to have to find some place that's going to allow me to put my foot up these young men's behind, verbally and physically. So that's at the end of the day, we have to. If I don't, who will?
You brought up something I was going to ask you next. And for, don't want to stereotype. Our community, but you have a lot of kids, and I'm assuming, because I think we talked about this one time, who don't have a lot of males in the house, male leadership in the house. Am I correct on that?
You are very correct on that. I am primarily the male leadership that they identify with. If they do have a father, he's in and out. That could be in and out of jail. That could be in and out of drug abuse. That can be in and out the house. And so they identify my level of persistence and constant flow of being around them. They allow that to be that level of understanding to say, okay, coach is going to be there no matter what. Through good times and bad times, coach is going to be there. So just that level of consistency, they understand and they relate with that a lot more than they do that absent father or the absent uncle or absent granddad, whatever that may be.
Do you get a lot, because I know a lot of guys deal with this here in Carolina, do you get a lot of pushback from that single mama? About, you know, they have a tendency to treat these kids as babies and everything. Do you get a lot of pushback from that?
Yes, from that
single mama?
Yes, from single mom, yeah. We get a lot of pushback from them. Some moms believe we too hard on them, or some moms believe that, we pretty much need to take care of them all the time, and she doesn't have any responsibility. So it's either one end of the spectrum. Either she completely just saying, oh, well, you take care of this, you take care of that, but won't follow through with any discipline at home, or she is, you too hard on my baby, I'm going to transfer him, or I'm going to call the state on the fact that you won't allow him to play in the game because he got a C. Well, he got a C and got a dang on A in the class. He got a C. He got an A. I'm playing the kid with the A, mama, just so that you understand that, because I'm holding him to a higher expectation. And so, yeah, I do get some pushback from them. They don't like the way I run the academic services after school. As far as, you know, we have study hall after school. After study hall, then we have lifting. After lifting, then we got team dinner. The only reason we got team dinner is because 96% of my kids are free of reduced lunch. 96% of my kids are free of reduced lunch. So with that being said, we ended up being able to feed our guys.
Now, run that by me one more time now. You have a study hall at the end of the school day?
At the end of the school day, every day, from 3:30 to 4:30, they're in study
then
hall.
Then you feed them.
Then we have lifting. Yep, then we feed them, and then they come down to practice. So I'm probably the only crazy coach in the state that practices for an hour and, I don't know, 15 minutes. That's our maximum amount of time at practice.
Say, run that by me one more time now. You practice how long?
So we practice for about an hour and 15 minutes.
Every day?
That's it, because we could practice for longer, but I take that time to get their bodies together physically and their minds together with study hall, because that creates that level of self-esteem, that level of belief in themselves, that they'll be great on the football field for me. And if all we're working on is blocking and tackling, and if all we're working on is our simple ways that we attack people with run-pass options out of our single spread single wing or jet stuff out of our spread single wing, there ain't that much stuff to go over in this world. You know, you got to keep this stuff simple for these babies to attack people and put people on their ass. The more stuff that they out there thinking about, trying to figure out how to do, the slower they're going to play. And that's one thing I don't want my guys to do, is play slow. So with that being said, we only practice for an hour and 15 minutes. So after they get out of team dinner, then they come down to the football field at about 5:15. We're done at 6:45 every day. They're on the bus going home every day.
That is unreal. Now that's something I did not know that you did. You know, I'm writing that down. Yeah, I didn't know you. Now, have you done that ever since you've been there, or is this something that you developed into doing?
No, this has been from day one. Been from day one. We've been doing things this way for 10 months out of the year. So the only month we don't do this is during the month of December. Now, it's voluntary in the off season, but, you know, most guys, if you're going to feed them, They saying they ain't going home. They want to eat. so they go through whatever I ask them to do to get some mashed potatoes and gravy. Oh, Coach, you ain't talking
what
about
do you
me.
What do you mean? you give me some wicked ideas over here, man. Now, what do you feed them?
Usually we got so for the big fellas, so I always got some guys that's a little overweight too. So those guys will have an option to have a sub and a salad, or just a salad with chicken or turkey on it. So that'll be one option. And the other option for the guys trying to gain weight, mashed potatoes and gravy is made every day. A vegetable is made every day, and then they'll have a different meat. Or you could go ahead and have a sub. If you don't want hot food, you can go ahead. They'll make you a sub fresh and have a salad, some fruit, and chocolate milk. Chocolate milk is every single day. That is the number one muscle recovery drink that we believe in, not muscle milk, not all the stuff that's very expensive, chocolate milk. It will give them 9 grams of protein right there, right after a workout. So my guys will go from, a 13-inch neck to a 16-inch neck by the time they're a senior. Like we gonna get you thick. We gonna get you nice and thick, and your body is gonna look good. So once again, that self esteem thing is there. So you could have came into our program 320 pounds, flabby with a jelly belly. Now you leaving out our program 305 pounds, and you walk around with your shirt off thinking you somebody. You got a girlfriend and everything. But that self esteem thing is what has helped them big boys feel better about themselves. So now they're not getting bullied in school anymore. Bullying is real. They're not getting bullied.
Okay.
They got a girlfriend, a cheerleader, a 305-pound dude with a cheerleading girlfriend. You somebody. So for us, it's about building that belief.
I know somebody's asking this question, so let me go and ask you now.
Yes.
Where do you get your weight room in? Do you do weights during the season?
Yes, we do lift during the season. The administration has worked with me now because they see the change in our academics, but they see the change in the amount of players I have. Trying to fit 60, 70, sometimes even 90. If JV and varsity trying to lift at the same time, that's 90 dudes. If they try and lift at the same time, it's chaotic. And so after school, so what they figured is they gave me a class, advanced nutrition, pretty much football tech class, from 2:30 to 3:30. So now we're able to have – so the offense lifts from 2:30 to 3:30 on Mondays and Wednesdays while the defense is in study hall. And then from 3:30 to 4:30, the defense lifts. And so that you get a chance to – so you get 4 days of lifting in Monday through Thursday. As a player. Now, obviously, Thursday, it's not a heavy lift. It's just what we call a big gun bicep. It's just a curl tricep workout. Pretty much just look good the day before. Just look good on game day with some pretty thick arms. Just intimidation, you know. And pre-game, my guys be on the field, they pants on and shirts off. They want to scare the hell out of their opponent. Let them see how ripped up they is. And so, the funny thing about that is sometimes I got a bunch of guys that look like Tarzan and play like Jane. So at least they scare you a little bit. You know, they don't play that much. Them guys don't play that much, but at least they look good when they get off the bus. Everybody got a bunch of those guys. So in reference to our lifting, yes, we do lift during the season, and that's pretty much how we do it. We'll use that 2:30 to 3:30 class period. That helps us out a lot.
So you got one from 2:30 to 3:30 in the weight room, and then they flip. Then while one is in the weight room, the other one is doing study hall. Is that correct?
Offense and defense. Yep. Yes, sir.
And from 3:30 to 4:30, they flip, right? Is that correct?
From 3:30 to 4:30, that's when the defense is inside of the weight room. The offense is in study hall. And then that's when they meet up inside of the lunchroom at about 4:45. They eat together for team dinner, and then they come down the street then they walk down to the practice field at about 5:15, and they'll stay on the practice field. Pre-practice will start at 5:15 or 5:30, and then we'll practice from 5:30 to 6:45. That's what I was talking about as far as that hour and 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you come up with this because you had so many? Was part of the reason you did it because you had a lot of what kind of coach I'm talking about here? Not youth coaches, but outside coaches, guys who are not on staff. Did this help you a lot with them?
I did that for that reason and give those guys enough time to get to practice from work without stress. Oh, I got to get there. I
got
to get there. Nope. As long as you can get here about 5:30, coach, I got you. I'll take care of everything else. The other thing is, instead of sending my players home, I'm able to keep my babies with me.
Mm-hmm.
So with the fact that I got them with me all the time, this is even during the offseason, we don't have those works.
Now, what's your budget for that as far as feeding them in the afternoon?
Like I said, our state helps us out.
You got the free lunch. There you go.
Yep, since our school is 96% a free reduced lunch. So they take care of that supper program.
There he is.
What, do you have some people come visit you?
Yeah, my whole house is full right now. My in-laws is here and everybody here right now.
Okay, all right. Now, a couple other questions. You have been on the road a lot speaking and everything.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Pretty much what we do, obviously everybody knows what we do with the single wing is unique. And a lot of people are always trying to find different ways to become better. And so Glazier reached out to me and asked me if I would like to talk about what we do a little bit, because they have a great guy already, Rick Darlington, that does an amazing job. And I know a lot of other guys have talked for the Glazier circuit, Jerry Sarchet and, Coach Harold Strauss, he used to speak Glazier. A lot of different guys have spoken Glazier and spoken in different clinics around the country. So, I'm no genius at this stuff, but what we do is, it's a little bit different with our single wing. We spread you out, and we look just like that Wildcat formation that Houston Nutt started playing with, or really Gus Malzahn started playing with at Arkansas. So we look just like that, but we decided to then take our blocking back in year 2013. Nobody's covering our blocking back. So we figured we'll take our blocking back and we'll split him out as well. And we'll have we'll have two guys in the backfield, and we'll have our blocking back split out to the right. We'll be unbalanced to the left with our tight end split out. And so to the right for us, we'll have a guard, and then we'll have our tight end. And then on the line. And then off the line, we'll have our H, which is our H-back, our fullback, our blocking back. And then we'll have a Z. Our wing back will be off the line. He'll be split out too. So we started showing some different stuff from it, run pass options and all that jargon. Really, it was just to create some bad eye discipline for the opponent, because all we want to do is run off tackle. So a lot of people thought that it was very intriguing, but just my approach my transparency, the way, I go about my business as far as the way I try and present what we do, and and talk about the National Single Wing Coach Association and how Doug Kerr helped show me the jet stuff, and how Coach Barrow and Coach Hofer talked to me about the simplicity of the scheme, how you taught me, and Doc Ward taught me severe angle blocking. So I'm a bit of a monster when it comes to some of this stuff, because I've had so many different ideas poured into my brain on how to make what we do work. But most importantly, with single wing football, you got to make it your own. And that's one thing you guys taught me. Don't try and be this guy. Don't try and be that guy. You got to be yourself. And I think that goes into a lot of what you was just saying before the radio show just started. You got to you do what's best for your program, and you do what you know. And so this is what I know. The Wildcat action of it is what I know, and it really helps us out.
Why do you sit to the left?
What's that, Coach?
Why do you set your formation to the left?
So we're unbalanced to the left because my passing strength is to the right. Yep, because my passing strength is to the right, and my quarterback is right-handed. So I ain't trying. Who am I fooling, myself or the other team? I know he's going to throw to the right side more times than not. So I'm putting the most guys that Ellis would run out to the right side for me. Unbalanced to the left, my only reason for being unbalanced to the left was because my first single wing tailback was left handed.
Yeah.
And so we've just always been we just stuck to it. Why, once again, who am I fooling? Us or them? You know, so
okay.
So I just kept it that way because all the middle schoolers in our city understand unbalanced, we unbalanced to the left. They understand that. They understand the guard that pulls a lot is going to be to the right side, so on and so on and so on.
Okay. I never even looked at it like that, to tell you the truth.
Yep.
Okay. Now, you got a special story. I want everybody to hear that story. You there?
Yes, I'm still here, Coach. Story in reference to what happened with my son.
Yeah, yeah. Tell everybody that story, man, because I tried to find that TV clip and I couldn't find that dude. And if I get a chance, I'm gonna put it up on my. If you can share that link, if you still have it, I'm gonna put it up on my Facebook page.
Yeah, I have it. I'll send it to you tonight. It basically what it came down to was just an assessment of need. In a sense, that's all it really came down to. You know, I don't try and be a genius about that process. I had a player that was living in the streets, you know, drug abused and passing himself around to young ladies as much as he could, or whoever was pretty much going to let him stay inside of their house for a couple weeks. And once that information got to me, it came out because he wasn't a player at my school. He knew some of the guys on my team, and everybody in the community knew him, but he went to the neighboring high school. And so what ended up happening was the kid just so happened to walk inside of our building and register as a student because he was able to move in with a young lady he was dating that mama knew some people in the administration office, so they got him registered at our school. And so he started taking classes and things like that, came to introduce himself to me. But I knew the background of the situation already, as I was saying. You know, everybody was already telling me, you know, Coach Parker, that guy, you know, he be sleeping in cars. And so with that being said, obviously, you know, we wrap our arms around those situations. We don't fear those situations at Rouge. So we brought him along in the program. He was lifting and things like that with the program. But, I got a small refrigerator in my office, so I would leave yogurts and Nutri-Grain bars in there. He would come in there, and he would eat up all of it. You know, he would take a couple, and before I know it, it's all gone. And so I just kept stocking it because it was an assessment of need. And so from there, we pretty much ended up taking a very dark turn. We went to football camp, came back from football camp. I got a call from River Rouge Police. Hey, Parker, we got one of your guys. And I said, well, who? They said, well, you got to come down here. We can't necessarily tell you. At that moment, ended up going and finding out it was him. Basically, what he did was he stole a bike, and he was attempting to ride a bicycle from the River Rouge area to downtown Detroit, which on a bicycle is about got to be a 45-minute to hour and 15-minute bike ride to get to downtown Detroit. And that's where my wife and I had a condo at the time. When he did that. And so she looked at me in my eyes after we went to the court case form, and she said, we can't keep allowing him to be out here like this. She said, you got to do what you got to do, you know. And so from there, I went up to him, and I told him, I said, you know, we want to help you change your life. We want to make you better. And so I invited him to move in with us. We had extra room in our house. There was only us two at the time. And he came on in, and he wasn't that great of an athlete. He had a flabby body, and so we had to really get him a little bit hardcore in the weight room. He ended up blowing his body up from about 208 pounds flabby to about 215, 220, just raw muscle. And he ended up learning how to play quarterback, learning how to play linebacker, and did a great job. He's in his he's going into his senior year of college right now at Siena Heights University. Plays linebacker, inside linebacker for them. Naturally went to Ferris State to play for Coach Tony Anise, but some things didn't work out there as far as on the field, and ended up coming to transfer to a school that had a little bit more roster space for him. Like I said, he's not the greatest athlete, just a good young man that just needed a fair shot in life. So, you know, the story is all told. You know, he's in a great place as far as who he is right now. It all started because an assessment of need. I took a look at what he was going through and what we had for offering and, you know, reached out my hand. I know, you know, some coaches won't do that or you know, they don't believe, oh, you know, what if he steals something, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. Or what if we able to actually help this kid change his life? And we was able to do that.
You know, it's a touching story. It's when I was at the conclave, I think that's where they played that video.
That sure
and, yeah, and I, one of the few times I came to tears just looking at that because that was, you know, that was one hell of a story and everything. And, you know, I've never been more proud of a guy than I was of you to do that, you know, and because a lot of guys won't step up like that. You know, there are a lot of guys who have, but a lot of guys just don't step up to the plate. You know, they give lip service, but a lot of guys who won't step up to the plate like that. Yeah. I see you, you know, sending out these messages about your kids signing and your kids committing and everything. You know, and you just run an old country single wing and all that good stuff. How do you do that running that old antiquated defense? That old antiquated offense. How do you get your kids in school and everything? Because, you know, you got to be flashing, you got to be doing all this other stuff, you know, spread them up, shoot them up. How do you do that?
Working on blocking and tackling. Every coach in America wants to come inside of a building and find guys that got good grades, they're physically tough, and then they're skilled in either blocking or tackling or disengaging from blocks and tackling. And so if we're very violent against each other at practice every day. And so with our game of football and the way it's changing, everybody wants to know how do we save the game. We teach kids how to be more physical on the field. Because right now a lot of kids are getting hurt because they're not physical. And so when coaches have been coming down to our building, you know, whether it's Division I, Division II, and AIA, they've been coming out, they've been finding some pretty physical dudes, you know. Guys are trying to put guys on their backs and think it's funny and get after people, get after each other at practice. And so because our GPA is high, we have qualifiers, you know. So most kids from urban settings that can run a little bit and that's a little bit physical, they usually don't have grades. Well, my criteria is a little bit different, you know. If you don't come to school, you can't come to practice. If you miss one day of practice, you miss one half of the game. If you miss 2 days of practice, you miss the whole game, sitting in the stands, you're a spectator. So the standards have helped create a system where college coaches are able to come in and get guys that's going to be able to come into the university and be a productive citizen. Are they going to be an All-American? Are they going to be a Hall of Famer at that university? That's yet to be determined. But most importantly, they'll be productive. They'll be able to go because of the structure that's set up. So the way we're able to really get coaches to come in is by letting them know, hey, this guy don't mind hitting people in the teeth, coach. But we need guys like that, coach. You know, the game of football is getting a little soft and blah, 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 blah. So they know that they'll be able to come and find guys that's willing to block and tackle down and down. So that's what's been helping us out as far as getting the college coaches in the build. And, you know, you don't got to be fancy. You got to be able to do something well. And so that we try and hang our hat on that.
How many kids did you, over the not counting this year right here, how many kids have you put in school?
Wow. Since 2010, I would say on average, woo, coach, that's a large number. Somewhere between seven and as many as 1 year I had 12 guys signed. So it's 2017, so over 7 years, I would say over 50 guys have went off to college to go and play some football. Because if I'm just saying on average, seven guys, yeah. Yeah, so it'll the number will be up there. It's definitely over 50. I'll get you the data. I'll get you some data on it. I'll send that to you so you'll be able to post that too.
Yeah, and the reason I asked
that. We pride ourselves on that. So this week a lot. This week we have, how many guys are signing this week? It should be eight guys, possibly 10. I got two more guys I got to get finished up by Wednesday. So it's going to be 10 guys, eight to 10 guys this year. At the lowest, it's going to be eight. At the most, it's going to be 10.
Now,
and other four guys, they don't want to play football. And so I only have 14 seniors, and one of them guys, three of those guys are going to the military.
Okay. And I hope everybody's saying not the question, but the question underneath the question, because here you went into a situation where nobody was doing nothing. 1.3 average overall. I think you said. Now you have averaged anywhere from 7 to 10 kids signing letters of intent every year, on an average.
Oh yeah.
You know, in an urban school, and they're being productive citizens. You've changed the culture. They have taken ownership of their program, and all you did, you didn't do anything fancy, but tough love. That's all you did. And it's not hard to do. Yes, it is hard to do, because a lot of people don't have the patience to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now you are cruising. If I can say that, compared to what you went in for the first year, now you're just cruising through that thing.
It's definitely cruise control, Coach. I mean, when you got on one day, you got Michigan and Michigan State in the building, and they don't want to be in the office at the same time with each other. And then right when they leave, Wisconsin come in. You got Brett Bielema calling and offering guys, and you got Syracuse calling and offering guys. Yeah, we're on cruise control now, because prior to this, we didn't have any Division I caliber guys. We've had a bunch of NAIA Division II caliber dudes that we took pride in getting them in school. Now, it's pretty easy to get guys in school. The coaches come to us. You know, all the cold emails and cold calls that used to have to make, I don't make half of those these days, you know, except for the guys that aren't as skilled. You know, I still make the cold calls and cold emails for those guys, but for most of my players, most of my guys already got offers and stuff right now in the class 2018. They pretty much all set.
Do you do a lot of camps with your kids, or how do you do that? How do you get them prepared for that moment?
We raise money. We rent a 15 passenger food hall, and we go from state to state. Whoever came in our building and created some interest, we're going. We're gonna go to that school, and we're gonna try and take an offer from somebody. We're gonna earn an offer. So yeah, so that's a large piece of what we do. Hey, Grandma.
Oh, okay.
That's a large piece of what we do. You know,
so
we do take them to the camp around the country in the summertime. Is it expensive? Is it difficult? Yep. But that's what that fundraising is all about. That's why you do it. So you can take those babies and get them an opportunity to get them an opportunity to change their life. Last year we drove to Missouri, Kentucky. I can go down the line. Syracuse, Buffalo, Michigan State. I can go down the line of places we drove to. And are they easy drives? No. Sometimes I'm not. I'm in the driver's seat and I got kids in the back. I don't have nothing done with me, but it has to get done. It has to get done. So it's difficult, but that's the direction that college recruiting has went, you know?
Yeah.
You got to adjust.
What kind of fundraisers do you do for the guys who are listening? Because, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, well, where am I get the funds from and everything. What do you do?
We do your normal stuff, like we work through Adrenaline. And we'll sell popcorn, or we'll sell the little gold cards. The gold cards don't do that well for us because we don't have a lot of businesses here in River Rouge to solicit the type of gold cards. You know, the gold cards where you take the card to the place and you get this much money off. That's not really successful for us. The popcorn fundraiser is good for us. They usually bring us in somewhere between $2,000 and $4,000. And that's good money for us. I know some people are like, oh, we usually bring in $14,000. No way. You know, that's We're not bringing the 14,000 to anything. We'll car wash. We do some car washes. We do bake sales. In front of the lunchroom, those work out well for us. We sell gear. Now, what we'll do, we'll take money that we've made, and then we'll buy a box of T-shirts, and then we'll sell it. And everybody wants to come to the football games now, so they want to have on apparel. I'm sorry, that's my daughter that's making all that noise.
Mm-hmm.
So the T-shirt sales are real good money. Selling apparel, that helps out a lot. Let me see what other great fundraisers that we do. But the community is 100% involved because, you know, we'll go around the community, start passes with a shovel. We'll go around shoveling the old lady's snow. You know, the old ladies that can't get outside and shovel their own snow. And so what do those old ladies do? Those are the people that we can go to whenever we, you know, want to go and just pick up donations from someplace. And we're not asking for a certain amount of money, whatever they're willing to give. You know, this year we'll have a couple of standard, quote-unquote, fundraisers like a lift-a-thon and a golf outing, but that's going to cost us some money, so we got to raise money to make sure we can have those things, you know. So those are the type of fundraisers that we did, and they work. They've been good for us.
Okay. Now, you got your community. I know you don't have all of the community involved because nobody does. How does your community react to you? I mean, I know there was a bit of a question early, but how do what is the buy-in from them right now?
At this point, I could run for mayor and I may win. it's really good right now, from the old people to the young people, because now we're taking young men from this community. Like I said, it's guys that played football for me in 2009 that's graduated from college already, and it's back in the community with jobs, is able to help out their family, and that message right there spreads very, very far. Everybody knows about our academic all-state venue because our superintendent made it his business to get a billboard as soon as you pull in the River Rouge, just a billboard that with six of my players on it that was on the all-academic, all-state team and myself. So as soon as you pull in the River Rouge, the first thing you see. It don't say how many wins we've had. It don't say how many district championships we won, how many conference championships we won. It don't say nothing about the state championship run last year. It talks about academic, all-state. It says, welcome to academic, all-state. And it has a picture of us in uniform. And so the community loves that because they've seen the whole piece of, you know, that the city of River Rouge is enriched in sports. They have 12 state championships in basketball, and so everybody knew this is basketball city. But one thing that they remember about this place was the players would play back in the 60s, 70s, 80s from their freshman year to their senior year, and then they didn't go off to college. You know, for whatever reason that may be. You know, not saying it was the coach, but for whatever reason, they never left. Well, now it's a difference because everyone knows, well, it's not necessarily about the amount of championships you win. It's about what you're doing with these young men to further their life, to further their careers, to help them with more opportunities. And so that's pretty much what people really love about our program. I don't care less whether we win or lose, just to be honest, coach. You know, but if we do everything we supposed to do in a weight room, in a classroom, and socially, we gonna have a chance. And that's all a man can ask for in this world. So for us, the community has bought in because they know my ways. They know I can go 0-9, but if I got 9 guys signing on National Signing Day, that I just won the championship. You know, and so with that being known about our program, everybody loves what we're about and why we do what we do.
You talked to me last year about some opportunities that you were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think they just about laid the foundation for your statue there, right? Am I correct? I'm teasing with you. Are you there for life or what?
I'm in a situation right now where I could coach until I'm in a wheelchair in this place. If this is what God is calling me to do, this is what I'm going to do. However, has there been college jobs and college opportunities? I would be lying if I said no. And they keep coming. Some people like my energy. Obviously, what I do with X and O's and understand defensive back play and defensive schemes and offensive stuff. I'm a bit of a candidate when it comes to match jobs and position coaching jobs and GLIAC coordinating jobs and things like that. So it's a great opportunity that's there. But right now, God is leading me to be here in River Rouge.
Okay. Where do you see yourself maybe 10, 15 years from now? What do you want? Ultimately want to accomplish?
In how many years?
10 to 15, 20 years. I mean, you're young, man. I mean, you're young. You're so young. I forgot how old I was. Let me add some more years onto that. But what is your ultimate goal, Corey?
Wow. My goal was just to be a great husband and be a great father.
Mm-hmm.
That's my number one goal. So, you know, I pray that God continue to give me another day to try and, you know, be a great father and a great husband. The football coach stuff, you know, that's a part of it, but that's not the number one piece of it. It's a very small piece of it. So I love what I do, but I'm not going to make my life center around that because I have guys in the coaching community. Coach Tony Oatman, the defensive backs coach for the Detroit Lions. He said to me, I was at the Lions facility because we play in a prep kickoff classic, and so the prep kickoff classic was a big time a game first week of the season where you put some of the best programs around the state against each other, and so they have a little meet and greet at the Lions facility, and I was able to see one of my college coaches, who was Tony Oatman, who like I said, he coached the DBs with the Lions, and he said to me, you know, I'm just so proud of you. And he say, but you know, I've been hearing some things that, you know, about you moving into the college ranks. And he say, I'm gonna tell you like this, Corey. He say, you look at me, and you probably think the grass is greener. Because I've been able to, you know what, purchase my wife a real nice car or live in a certain type of house. He say, but I look at you, and I think that the grass is greener on your side. And I squint my eyes saying, well, what you mean by that, Coach? He said, Corey, since the last time you seen me at Eastern Michigan, my address has changed 6 times. And I can tell you what, there ain't nothing nice about explaining to the wife that we just got fired or explaining to the daughter we got to move you to another school in this state because we got to go with this coach, so on and so on and so on. So with that being said, he spoke to me about that, and then a good friend of mine, Tyrone Wheaton, talked to me about recruiting and what it means to be outside of the household from your own family. He said, Corey, I'm staying about somewhere between 80 and 88% with somebody else's son. But who's spending 88% of the time with my son? So if I'm out raising somebody else's son, who's out raising mine? And so that touches me a lot. Now, is it a lot of money in the college and NFL ranks? Yes. Yes. You know, is it more challenging scheme-wise? Yes. So is there interest? Yeah, but at the end of the day, I could die doing what I'm doing right now, still feeling satisfied. So if there's an offer that I can't refuse, then I may have to take a peek. But most of all, if all is well, what I'm doing in the eyes of God, then I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing right here at River Rouge. So
nobody listens to an old fart like me anymore, but they do listen to you young guys who've been through the fire and everything.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to a young guy who is just getting into this business? Now, I know you young guys, when y'all get into business, y'all think y'all got it. You want to be assistant 1 year and the head coach the next year. What would you tell a young guy?
Never question your gut instinct. Go with your gut instinct. by any means. Go with your gut instinct. If you're telling yourself on fourth and inches to quarterback sneak, but instead you punt, that's something that you're going to live to regret because you might have been able to get that inch by believing in yourself. So most of all, believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself.
And career-wise?
What's that, Coach?
And career-wise?
Career-wise, put God first. Everything else is going to work itself out right. All the steps that we're taking right now, they're already destined, man. It's already supposed to happen in whatever particular order it's going, it's going to happen. You know, so put God first and trust in the path that he got you on, and everything will work itself out right. You know, going to another AFCA and trying to convince somebody and this, that, and the other and all that stuff, when it's meant to be, it's meant to be. So career-wise, make sure you put God first and you have faith that what you're doing is the best for you. And make the place that you're at the best it could be. Don't worry about the next job. Don't think about where you're going to next and I'm trying to set up this so I can do that. Because the guys that's doing that never get great at where they're at, and they never get out. They end up getting fired. That's how they get out. They get kicked out. You know, my outlook is I'll never get fired where I'm at because I'm going to make where I'm at great until somebody takes me from where I'm at, until somebody forces me out by saying, you know too much, go ahead and go. You know, and to God say, this is it right here, Corey. This is what I need you to move on. So you got to be an active listener. You got to listen to your heart. You got to listen to God. You got to make sure you well into prayer. And if you're not a man of faith, then, you know, you got to stand by something. So that's what I'll say career-wise.
How can people get in touch with you? Because I know somebody's going to want to – somebody got to be inspired by you. I mean,
I can be called anytime. My cell phone number is 313-658-0079. I can reach on Facebook. On Facebook, my name is Corey Parker, CoreyParker. Or I can be emailed anytime at coachcparker@gmail.com. Once again, that's Coach, C-O-A-C-H, the letter C as my first name, and then my last name, Parker, P-A-R-K-E-R, @gmail.com.
And where are you speaking at this in the spring?
I'll be speaking at the Glazier Clinic. I'll be at the Glazier Clinic. See you later, Alberta. I'll be at the Glazier Clinics in Cleveland. That will be in March, and then I'll also be at the Glazier Clinics in Chicago in February.
Well, I congratulate you, man, because I know where you came from. I know what you had to go through. And I saw the growth. We all saw the growth in you. And you have done a superb job with that program. You have done a superb job with those kids. You know, and that's always number one with me. You know, take care of those babies. Everything else will be everything else will come later on in life and everything. And make sure you you do the best you can right there. So with that, Corey,
thanks.
I want to thank you again.
Thank you
for coming on. I mean, you make my day every time I talk to you.
Thank you. I hope I was able to maybe help out and inspire. I know I wasn't much about X and O's, but I talk as much X and O's with guys if they give me a call or shoot me an email. But I know this talk was more about building the NFC program. So I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk to these guys. Coach, any way I can pay it forward, you guys have been so gracious to me and helping me and my family out with freaking off-tackle. Off-tackle and got me a house. Off-tackle then helped me pay my car note. Lord have mercy. Off tackle. So you call it hammer, I call it off tackle. So thank God for you and your buddies and all that you guys have been able to do for me. So this was the least that I could do for you.
Okay, buddy. Well, you go and enjoy your family now, and
I will, Coach.
And tell everybody I said hello. How's that little one doing? I know you had a little one. How's that little one doing?
He's doing great. He's one of the leading scores in his soccer league. He's did that. He's led them in scoring since he was 2 years old, and he's very good at what he do. He's aggressive, and so I'm proud of that. And you can't start football in our particular city until you're at least five. So he's going to get started up this summer. So we're very excited about that.
Okay, man. Well, go enjoy your family. And again, I thank you very much. And we'll be talking. Are you going to the Conclave?
Yep. I'll be down there.
Okay, I'll probably see you there. Okay. All right, buddy. Take care and have a good week, Corey.
All right.
Okay.
I will. You too. All right.
Okay, buddy.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Bye bye. And guys, that was Corey Parker from River Rouge High School in River Rouge, Michigan. I tell you, you can see the excitement coming out of him. The dedication he takes for young men, and you know, not only to be tough on them, but to show them how to get out of the way, get out, and make something of themselves. And, you know, use that good old tough love. It still works, guys. Old school still works. As I always say. Well, we're about to get out of here. And again, next week we'll have Doug Kerr and Jerry Sarchet on. And we'll be talking more single wing next week. I know it's Super Bowl, but we're going to try to get it done anyway. If there's any change, I'll put it up on the my Facebook page. And we'll make it work somehow. I don't know how. I wasn't even thinking Super Bowl when I talked to those men, but we'll make it work somehow. These are two guys who are very knowledgeable in a single wing. I've known Doug. The first tape I saw of single wing was The Wedge, and he's down there with Doc Ward, and I was looking at that thing one night, and I said, "Where's the ball?" Next thing I know, some guy's running down the middle of the field, running the wedge, and those guys have always been gracious and helping and everything. So we're going to get a chance to sit down and listen to Doug and Jerry. We're going to give you a double whammy next week, okay? Again, if you're a youth coach and you want to come on and tell your story, bring it on. You know, we want to talk about all facets because those babies are just as important as the big babies. And we just want to know what you're doing in your organization. We don't know, you know, everybody's system is different, but, you know, you get better by sharing. And we just want to know that, okay? So on top of that, with that, we're going to start bidding you a good night. And, you know, tell somebody you love them tonight because it's crazy out there, people. You know, and we got to start coming together here. And, you know, we just got to just tell somebody you love them tonight, you know, and just respect one another. And we will,
I see trees of green.
Just pray for everybody in this country because some crazy stuff is going on, and we just need to start coming together, start talking to each other instead of at each other. With that, the Triple Wing Hammer Report is out. Y'all have a good week. And if you see my Facebook page changed. I'm working on some things, so don't be alarmed when you see it and everything. We're trying to redo it and everything. So on top of that, y'all have a good night and have a nice week. Bye-bye.
The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see trees of green, red roses too. white and blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Good night, everybody, and as usual, hug somebody and tell them you love them. Good night.